You're listening to Inside Acting. To learn more and make a donation, visit InsideActingPodcast.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Inside Acting Podcast. My name is Albert Meyer.
And my name is Trevor Algott.
And Inside Acting is a podcast for artists by artists. And what we try to do is interview all types of different artists, whether it be musicians, actors, in the entertainment business, casting directors, managers, agents, so on and so forth, and bring those interviews to you.
And what we want to do is really keep this as open a dialogue as possible. You know, Albert and I are actors in LA, but we by no means know everything. So we want to make sure that we include all points of view and that we're all learning from everything. In fact, this is a great episode for learning stuff.
Yes.
Because we got some cool debates coming up. So let's just jump right in.
All right. So first of all, we want to just give a little teaser of this week's episode, who we're interviewing in this week's episode. And that is a man by the name of Doug Bressler. And Trevor, you can talk a little bit about your interview.
Yeah, Doug is awesome. He's a good friend of both mine and Albert's. And Doug is kind of a self-made, I don't want to say man, but, you know, self-made person where he really just kind of took, he's a very creative guy. He does music, he does animation, he does all sorts of production stuff. And he just kind of took all his talents and pulled them and created his own company called Dougtoons. You've probably seen some of his cartoons on TV, on the internet, Eli's Dirty Jokes. He did some stuff with the Ask a Ninja guys, if you're familiar with that. So he's kind of been all over the place, and he's got some really great insights on how to use internet and social media and these different kind of tools to help market yourself as an artist.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll leave the rest of that to the actual interview. We don't want to talk too much about that or give too much away, but it's a great interview, and Doug's a great guy, and we hope that you check out Dougtoons.com.
Yeah. Cool. So we actually we have an email. We've got our first kind of debate on this podcast.
This
week
is great.
But before we jump in, Albert, what are you up to this week? What happened for you?
Well, I had a couple of auditions and a couple of actually musical theater auditions that went really well.
What were they? What were they for?
They were
not a lot of musical theater auditions in LA.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised. It kind of depends. I mean, it also kind of depends on what you define as Los Angeles, too, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on down in the OC.
Ventura County.
Yeah, and up in Pasadena. So one of them was for the Pasadena Playhouse. They're going to be doing a production of Camelot. And another one was for Reprise, which is the musical theater company that does musicals at UCLA, and their new artistic director is Jason Alexander.
No, like George Seinfeld?
George Seinfeld, Jason Alexander, yeah.
George Seinfeld. George, comma, space, Seinfeld.
George Seinfeld. George, wait, what is his last name now?
Costanza,
thank you. I was like, that's not his last name.
Yeah.
I'm just going with the flow, man. I'm a yes man. I am a yes man. You say something, and I'm like, yes, that's correct. Yes, George Costanza. No, he took over as their artistic director, I want to say like last year. It's been a while, but anyway, they perform at UCLA, and they're doing a production of Carousel. So I auditioned for both of those. No callbacks, unfortunately, but I thought that both auditions were actually pretty successful,
cool.
Which is an interesting comment considering the email that we're going to read later. I also on Saturday attended Actor Fest. I went to Actor Fest 2009, which is essentially just a con if you're a video gamer out there.
Con.
You know, we refer to these cons, you know, BlizzCon and QuakeCon and E3 and GDC, the Game Developers Conference. It's basically just a big festival or conference for actors. This year it was held at the California Market Center. I don't know if that's where they always hold it. And it's put on by Backstage. They do one in LA, one in New York. They do it once a year. And it's just this huge conference for actors. That's all I'm going to say about it for now. And the reason for that is that we were so inspired by the experience, not only what we learned there, but what we, you know, would like to caution actors about and that kind of thing, that we are going to give, we're going to do an entire episode dedicated to ActorFest. So we're going to have an entire, it's going to be most likely the next episode, episode 5, will be all ActorFest all the time. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be very interesting. If anybody listening out there follows me on Twitter, you know that I was basically a Twitterin' fool that day. I was
Twitterin' like a mofo, I think is how I put it.
Yeah, that yeah. was. Your RT for me was Twitterin' like a mofo. Yeah, I was Twittering like crazy on that day. So you've already picked up on some of the things that I learned and heard. And Trevor and I are actually going to use my tweets as sort of notes to go back over the
like
things.
Like an outline
that,
almost.
Yeah, exactly. To go back over the things that I learned that day.
Well, I'm really glad that you had a good time at it, because we were talking before and I told you that I went to ActorFest when I first got out here like 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was... like, it was a bad experience. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that part of it was because I could have sworn I paid like $50 to go to it. But
you may have,
and you,
may
you
have
said that
it.
It's free to register.
Yeah.
I almost said registrate, to register. But I went and it just felt to me like a feeding ground for all these companies that are built to mm-hmm. like just suck money out of actors.
Yeah.
Which you said you experienced some of, but you also had a free pass to like all the really good stuff.
Yeah. I was volunteering for backstage. I have a really great relationship with their team there. So I did get to attend some stuff for free, but I also had to spend half my day volunteering, which is fine, because I ended up sitting outside of you know, some of the rooms where the casting directors were talking and still excuse me, still getting stuff out of the experience.
Cool.
How about you, Trev? What have you been up to this week?
I actually have a quick little story that's I think a neat lesson. I had an audition for a show for our theater ensemble. It's a new show called In the Company of Jane Doe, and it's a really cool show. I read the script and I like the script, and it's kind of slightly absurdist kind of comedic, mm-hmm. but also it's got dramatic elements. So the audition that they asked for was a comedic monologue in a dramatic context.
Okay.
Which
kind of tough.
First of all, I mean, that's very specific and not a lot of actors have that at the ready. I certainly didn't, and I didn't have a chance last week to go and find something and prepare it. So I was thinking, like, dude, I'm not even going to go to this audition. You know, like, forget mm-hmm. it. I don't want to embarrass myself by bringing something completely inappropriate. But mm-hmm. I decided to go, and I just did another monologue that I had. and I was totally upfront with them. I was just like, I would have been kicking myself if I didn't show up, but here I am. This is the monologue I have. I know it's inappropriate, but I did read the script, and I liked it a lot. So I'm just going to do this, and then I'll leave.
I'll get out of your hair.
I did the monologue, and then afterwards they were like, "Well, you showed up." And I
was
"Ouch!" And now I'm going home.
Ouch!
But I got called back for it, and I booked it. So,
oh my god!
Yeah,
congratulations!
Yeah, so it's it's really exciting. I'm really excited to do it. There's a lot of other good actors that are both friends of ours that are in it as well. So
wait! You have to talk about the callback, because from the audition, that sounds like the worst thing ever. But
I know. Well, I was surprised that I got called back, but there, I guess, not a lot of guys auditioned. So I don't know if it was like I was in by default, just meeting the type of that character or what.
Mm-hmm.
But the audition went really smoothly, and I read with a couple different people, and I'm very, very excited.
Wow, that's awesome, man. What a cool experience that you, you know, I don't know. Everything we're talking about sort of is feeding into this email that we're about to talk about. That's so...
In fact, let's jump into that email.
Yeah, we might as well. So we're very excited because we got our first email.
Thank you, M.
Yeah, whoever you are, M. All they did was sign their name M, so we don't even know if this is a male or a female. But we got our first email to insideactingpodcast@gmail.com, which you should also send an email to. Okay, and I'm just going to read over the first part of it briefly, and then we'll kind of jump into our discussion. So this is, hey guys, and this is referring to episode 3. Hey guys, in the interview, Brian said that every time you go out for an audition, you have to understand and learn from it. A few years ago, I read an interview with Idina Menzel, and she described her audition for the role of Elphaba in Wicked. She said that in her mind, It was such a terrible audition that she went home and cried. Then fast forward to a year and a half later, and she's accepting a Tony for the role, that which she obviously got. That being said, how do you truly learn from and understand each audition when a lot of time we overlook certain things that the casting director did not overlook? When you are offered a role, it is easy to find out what you did well and what you could work on for the next audition. But you will be working with people who gave you the part. But when you don't get the part and have no opportunity to connect with those people in the room, how do you honestly know what to take from that experience? So essentially what he or she is saying is, how do you know whether, you know, an audition was successful or not unless you book it? Like, if you go in and you don't book it, how do you know what to take away from it? You know, what feedback can you expect? That kind of thing. So Trevor and I have a couple of responses to this on, and then we're going to sort of segue this into the debate,
yeah,
in quotes, that we keep referring to. I have a couple of responses. First one is, if you have representation, you can always ask that representation to try to get you some feedback. That is well within your rights as an actor. That's their job as your representation. You can ask your agent or your manager to contact that casting director, that producer, that director, whoever it is, and try to get you some feedback, first of all. It can be very useful. Sometimes it's really difficult to make that happen, especially if you don't get like a callback, but it doesn't hurt to ask. So that's first thing. Second thing is, I think that going back to Brian's interview, you have to remember what he said about removing the emotion. And this is something that I'm totally guilty of, and I think every actor is, because we just care so much. We want to please everyone. We want to book the job, you know, at the end of the day. But what Brian was talking about was removing the emotion from your audition experience, and just remember that it is a business. It is a business transaction. You're basically going in for a job interview at the end of the day. If you can really do all the things that Brian was talking about in the last interview, and I don't mean necessarily like going and signing up for a performer tracker. I'm sure Brian would love it. He gave you guys all a discount code in the last episode. But what he was talking about, the concepts remain the same. Being prepared, learning about the casting director before you walk into the room, learning about the office, learning about the role, learning about the show that you're auditioning for, learning about what works and what doesn't work for you as an actor, meaning what headshots,
exactly,
and so on and so forth, and just being ultra prepared when you walk in the room. Then you can be a lot more relaxed. You can do the work that you've put into the sides, which, if you ask Brian from the last episode, is almost secondary. And then you can walk away from that audition feeling like you've given it your all, you've given it your best, and you won't necessarily have to worry about whether or not you're going to book that role. And I'm going to drop in one little quote that I got from ActorFest.
This is a good one. I was going to suggest this.
Yeah, from Michael Testra, who's the casting director for Cold Case. And some of you may have seen me tweet this. He said, when you go in for an audition, especially for a television audition, when you go in for an audition, don't try to book the role. Try to book the office. Mm-hmm. And what he means by that is you may not be right for that role. They may go in a different direction. You might just be too tall, too short, you know, whatever it is. They might go in a completely different direction from what you look like as an actor, especially with television. It's very important how you look on film and television. But they may go in a different direction. So he said, don't book the role, book the office. Meaning, if you have a successful audition, they're going to invite you back. They're going to ask you back. They're going to bring you in for other roles. It can be very difficult when you don't book that role and you feel like you're just, you know, an island, you're just floating. You don't get any feedback. But if you can set goals for yourself and you can, make decisions about, this is what I want to get from this audition. And this is what I think, you know, if you can sort of, envision yourself having a successful audition, then you can sort of compare your actual audition to your vision or your goal of what that successful audition would be.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot to learn from each audition. I mean, and Brian said this in the interview. He said this is a relationship business. So, you know, almost In fact, I would say, yeah, above the actual audition, make sure that you know who you're reading for and who you're talking to. And, you know, if you're tracking things like the headshot you use to get yourself in, the outfit that you're wearing, things like that, that can speak, that can help your future success rate of getting into the room, which is the most important part more than anything else. And then once you're in there, you know, you are an actor. You're out here pursuing this. That's your profession. So you've done the homework, you know, you've done the work on the script and the sides. That just can't be your main focus. You know, like Brian said, right. Once you put all your eggs in one basket, you start freaking out. It falls apart in the room. But if you've got kind of a multi-tiered approach to your kind of confidence level as you walk into the room, you've got a much higher success rate just because you know who you're talking to. You know about their life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just Googling somebody, you know, or People is another good website, PIPL.com, I think it is. You'd be surprised at the information you can look up on People.
Kind of frightening.
You know, and it's crazy because I started using PerformaTrack longer than a few months ago, but I started noticing what shirts were getting me called back and what shirts weren't. And I'm not even kidding. Like, this is a big... I took a commercial audition class a little while ago. And
that's so interesting.
They had us bring in different outfits, and she said, like, you know, on camera, and the teacher would be like, you know, this shirt works for you. This one doesn't, with your skin tone, with your hair, with your eyes.
Wow.
And I have a blue collared shirt that's from, like, J. Crew, I think, and I have this brown one that I'm wearing right now, which both get me called back. And other shirts, like, I have this really great green shirt that I wear that I like a lot because everyone's always like, oh, it makes your eyes pop. Doesn't get me called back at all. It doesn't work.
Wow.
And I had an audition a little while ago.
That's so fascinating. Where, and something you can track on.
Oh, yeah. You can track that because you go in. There's a little thing in PerformaTrack where you can track the outfit that you
what
wore.
What did you wear? Wow.
And I mean, it sounds so superficial, but how you look on camera is 50% of what those people are looking at when they're watching your audition.
Exactly.
You know?
Another tier I want to add to the multi-tiered approach, actually, Trevor. You know, and I like that we're, you know, talking about... a multifaceted approach. Just remember, for any actor listening to this, always remember, or any artist who has to sort of, you know, perform or audition and sort of, quote, get approval from someone, always remember that the casting directors want you to succeed. You know, unless they're a complete...
It makes their job a lot easier if you're
awesome.
Yeah,
exactly. Unless they're a complete asshole. But, you know, it does. It makes their job a lot easier. Remember, they're looking for you. They're looking for you. They're hoping that when you come in, you absolutely nail it so that they can go home at the end of the day. You know?
And they can also bring you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they can also bring you back.
Exactly.
They go, there's a good actor. Let's put them on the, you know, that special file of good actors that
exactly.
we can bring back.
Exactly. They're looking for you. They want you to succeed. In these panels that I was sitting in at Actor Fest with these, various casting directors, you'd be amazed at how sometimes, they can often be desperate to find someone. You know, and I guess what I'm trying to say about that is that that's their job is to seek out and find and discover actors. And a lot of them said they love finding new talent. Because I'm sure they would love to take credit for that. So do yourself a favor and sort of dispel the, you know, insecurity that when you walk in that room, you know, the casting director is judging you. You know, yeah, they're judging you, but it's not from a place of like, oh, this person's going to suck. It's God, I hope I can cast this next person that walks in the door.
So last week, or in the last episode, before the interview with Brian Vermeer, Albert was talking, you were talking about a manager that you had met with. And one of the comments that you said was that the manager had advised you, and you actually heard this reiterated at ActorFest, was not to thank casting directors after they bring you in for an audition, because that is, quote unquote, their job. And to me, that makes sense. You know, it's like a football player making a touchdown and doing some like dance or something. My dad always used to say when I was growing up, he'd be like, why are they dancing? That's their job. Like, like, good, you know?
You got the ball in the end zone.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
So Brian heard this, and in his interview, his whole approach, and this is just absolutely key to success in any business, is following up with the people that you meet, developing relationships with them so you can be working with them. Like he said time and time again, this is a relationship business. So when the manager told Albert not to say thank you, Brian was like, what? And I spoke with Brian a few times, and he actually wrote a nice, like 4.5-page, quote-unquote, rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think response is probably a better word for it.
But which we're going to post on the website.
It's great. We're going to take this whole PDF file and post it as a download on the website, because we can't read it all on the podcast. But there's so much great. Like, this little PDF here, if you have this as an actor, this will take you a huge way towards just having a more kind of... more longevity in your career, I think.
Yeah, an example. I'm not joking. I used it last night.
Did you really?
I did. Well, because I was putting together a postcard for a casting director to follow up, and there's an example in there of what that might look like, and I kind of followed it as a sort of semi guideline,
like a template.
Yeah.
No, Brian kind of thought to himself, like, after he said he looked at Albert's Twitter profile and saw Albert twittering from ActorFest, and he saw that another casting director had reiterated the same point.
It's not another casting director. The first person was a manager.
Yeah.
And then the person from ActorFest was a casting director. So it's just really interesting. But after we talk about what Brian wrote, we're going to talk about the compromise that we've come to.
Yeah. So Brian kind of said, okay, maybe I got this wrong. Like, maybe it's not just saying thank you. It's following up, really, the thing. You know, you don't have to thank them for bringing you into the room, because yes, that is their job, but follow up with them, build a relationship. And in this PDF, he gives a couple of examples, and I just want to highlight a couple things. He hits 5 or 6 bullet points, and the first one he says is not just saying thank you. First things first, let's understand what is meant by thank you. Reinforce who you are and why they should forge a relationship with you. And then he gives a great example of a follow-up that you could do, which basically says, thank you for bringing me in. It was great to meet you. And then, bam, I'm also doing this. I'm also doing this. I'm also doing this. Check this website out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to you soon. You know, and if you've done your research on them, you might find out in his example here that they're a surfer, you know. And, you know, have a great weekend surfing. I hear the waves are great in Zuma or something like that.
Right,
you know, you're becoming a friend with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, look at any movie out there. Like, Kevin Smith's a great example.
Yeah.
Who does he keep bringing in to do his movies?
Yeah.
All his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a couple different directors, they're always doing that. They're hiring their friends,
mm-hmm.
you know? And every once in a while, you know, the lucky actor who auditions gets in, but it's largely for your friends. Bullet point number 2, it's their job and it's your job to follow up. Number 3, he calls it feeding your inner lazy. He says that...
this is a great one. We should elaborate on that one.
He says that if you don't...
By the way, sorry to interrupt you, Trevor, but I don't want anybody to think that there's some, like... I don't want anybody to think that, like, Brian and I are in a fight.
Oh, no,
or
no,
something.
No, of
this
course
is
not.
We encourage this. We want this type of discussion to happen. He mentions my name multiple times in the PDF, so if you read it and you didn't have the context of last episode and this episode, you might think, whoa, this guy's, like, you know, really taking it to Albert. No. This is exactly what we want. I was so happy when I got this PDF and I was able to read over it, because I know that he's not upset with me. He was upset with the manager that I was talking to, but he's not really upset with them either. It's more
the
about
information.
The information and the differences in opinions. And this is the kind of stuff we want to sort of bring to you guys and answer questions for you if you have them.
I wish I had known this. I wish I had met Brian 5 years ago when I moved out here, because this kind of information could have definitely taken my career and been like, pa-ching, pushed it off on another track, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The third point he makes is feeding your inner lazy, and I love this one, because he says if somebody tells you not to say thank you or not to follow up because it's their job, quote-unquote, it's so easy for us actors to be like, okay, cool, I don't have to do any extra work. Great,
right.
You know? It's so easy, and, like, I can vouch for that.
Mm-hmm.
Someone tells me it's not necessary, I'm like, okay, good.
Okay, good.
Then I have more time for it.
Save 28 cents, I don't have to put together the postcard, I don't have to, like, get it out.
Exactly. And he also said, when I talked to him on the phone, he said, have you ever heard of anybody not getting hired because they sent a thank you note?
Right.
It's not going to hurt you,
right.
You know, if you follow up. Like,
yeah,
it's not going to kill your chances or anything. Fourth point, he says, consider the source. I should probably let you guys read the PDF on this. This is kind of a long point.
Well, basically what he's saying is, you know, a manager may not, depending on their motivation and their, I don't know, ethical standpoint, they may not want you forging really strong relationships with casting directors, because if you do, guess what? You don't necessarily need them. And that's the point that he's making about consider the source. So, you know, I'm not telling you to be suspicious of your representation, but it is a valid point.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to move around, you know, in your career. You're not going to be with the same agent forever. So bring those contacts with you. Don't like a lot of managers will say, oh, let me forge the relationship. Let me do this. Right. Let me do that.
He talks about that in the interview. You know, if you walk in, to CS, to like KSR or something, and you slap down on there, these are the casting directors that I have a relationship with. And it's just like boom, 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 boom. And if you've booked with them and stuff like that, I mean, how greatly does that increase your chances of signing with that agency
with a good one? You know? Yeah. I mean, you can walk up to an agent that you might think is out of your league. If you're armed with this information, it shows them you're taking your career really. Like I'm so excited. I'm so inspired by this past interview. I'm so thankful that Brian did this with us. The fifth point, because we got to wrap up here. The fifth point is the consequence, which we just talked about. What's the consequence of sending one of these cards? Like
right.
Nothing, you know,
right.
Like
right.
Worst case, they throw it out, you know, but like you've put it out there, you've made the effort.
So Trevor and I have been talking about this a lot, and here's the compromise that we've come to. You don't necessarily have to thank them. Use your best judgment. But following up is not going to hurt you, right? It's not going to hurt you. To follow up, it's not going to hurt you to not follow up. You know, it's so different from casting director to casting director. Mm-hmm. We may talk about this again in the next episode when we talk about the casting director panels I sat in on at ActorFest. But it's certainly not going to hurt. And so if you have the means, because I know it can cost money to do this thing, sending out postcards, if you have the means and you just want to follow up and remind them who you are so that you can build that relationship, that's okay. Just remember that, you know, it is, in fact, their job to do that. And so, you know, a thank you is perhaps not necessary.
You're building a relationship. I know we've said that again and again and again.
Well, but they said it again and again and again at ActorFest.
Yeah.
And I even sent
a Twitter to you, sort of to you about this when you were tweeting about ActorFest. I just had this, I was just thinking about it and I was like, man, I hate the word networking.
Yeah.
I hate it when people go out and they're like, oh, let's network or let's go to a networking event, because nobody wants to be networked with. I've had people come up to me and be like, they're like, hey, do you have a business card? Let's network. And I'm like, how hollow is that?
Ew.
You know, I feel gross when somebody does that to me. I'm like, so
ew,
I'm just another...
you got your networking all over me.
It feels like that. But if someone comes up to me and they ask me about myself and who I am and what I'm into, how charming is that? You know, I'm into that person. And then it's like, then I want to be their friend. I want to work with them. I want to reciprocate, find out what's going on with them. It's just all about people skills. And there's a really good book that I've read about this a couple times called Never Eat Alone by a guy named Keith Barazzi. He's also got another book that he just put out. I forget the name of it, but I'll put a link to that book on the website. It's
we gotta get all those links up, because we keep talking about these books and we want to make sure people can know where to find them.
Yeah, the book embellishes a lot on just interpersonal skills, you know, like, and I love the beginning of the book, because he sums up all the principles in the book. He sums up in the very first introduction. He says, a student asked him once, because he spoke at Yale or something like that, and he said a bunch of students came up and said, you know, what's the key? What's the secret to your networking success? You know, how do I get all these contacts like you? And he said, you want it in one word? Generosity. And I was like, my brain was just blown, dude, because it's what it's all about. You know, if you just give yourself to people and give them your resources and find out, like, oh, they need a massage. I know this great massage therapist. Just give them her name.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, hey, you know, you said you need a massage. You know, check out Danielle. She's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So before we jump into this interview, I just want to read the conclusion that Brian put on here, which just kind of puts a nice button on everything. He says, in conclusion, if you still feel that you shouldn't have to say thank you, then just remember this when the holiday season rolls around. When your performer friends mention that they're getting holiday gifts for their agents and managers to thank them for the hard work they did for them during the year, make sure to scoff and say, why are you thanking them? That's their job. not to mention that they take 10% of what you make. So that really just puts a button on everything.
Yeah, it's just remember, you're building relationships. And, you know, sometimes less can be more, but, you know, it doesn't hurt if you have the means.
Yeah.
So should we jump into this interview?
Yeah, let's jump into the interview with Doug. Feel free to shoot us an email if you agree or disagree with anything we've said. We really would love to hear from you. And like I said, we're not pros at this. We're just excited about this information because it's tried and true. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm sitting here with Doug Bressler, creator of Doogtoons and a good friend of mine. And I'm very excited to be talking to Doug because he's somebody who kind of built his whole entire job and his whole entire kind of niche in the internet world from scratch by himself. He's got some really neat ideas about kind of how to promote yourself, leveraging the power of the internet and social media. So, Doug, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
I'm happy
to be here.
Doug and I worked together at Apple back in the day. Doug had a cartoon that he created called Nick and Hyde, where he basically recorded a few friends and then animated.
My friends, Nick and Hyde.
Animated some cartoons around that. And then you had actually, I think, a good 30 minutes of animation on a DVD, and you had taken it to different networks.
There were a couple. I had a couple connections through friends. And so I figured I might as well. And so I think I dropped off a DVD at Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And they saw it and they liked it a lot, but they said, not yet.
Yeah. And so
this was 2005.
And what you did next is what I'm really fascinated with, because you really just kind of took matters into your own hands.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I didn't feel like I was ready at the time. I mean, I graduated college 2003, and I was kind of farting around trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I wasn't even sure if I wanted to do, you know, be a director, producer, or anything like that. So I was just enjoying myself. I was dating, you know, I was going out, drinking, having fun, and then I knew that I should probably start working towards something, and so as I said, I wasn't sure I was about to move to Chicago. I mean, there's a whole bunch of options up in the air. And one day in 2005, I mean, actually, let me backtrack a little bit. Nick and Hyde, the original series, the original episode was something I did in college in like 2001, 2002. And the next episode after that was 2005. So I took some time off.
Yeah.
I took some time off of animation, and I kind of just, you know, messed around and had fun and went to school and all that. But 2005 rolled around, and we had like this premiere party for Nick and Hyde 2, which was long overdue, and everybody had been screaming at me to make for years, and so I made it. And I made it mostly for friends. And I made it, and I didn't really think that it was going to be an internet meme or whatever they call it now. I didn't think that it was going to be anything or anything huge that a lot of people that I didn't know would be interested in. I thought it's mostly like an inside joke type of thing.
Right.
So, it got such a great response that I decided that maybe it had that potential, and I started trying to figure out ways to broadcast it out to as many people as possible. And I heard about this thing called podcasting, which was pretty much non-existent in 2004, 2005. There were a couple video podcasts in 2004. And when I say a couple, I really mean like two.
You jumped on the, like, that was right as the bubble was beginning to burst, jumped into podcasting.
I didn't even know what the technology was all about. So there was this great program that they released, and I think I got like the beta version. It was called Podcast Maker, and it's on Mac, and it was the easiest way to publish a podcast. And so I figured, well, you know, this is kind of a cool technology, you know, I'll just put it on a podcast. You know, I didn't really think – I wasn't like aiming to, you know, get it featured or anything like that. I was just like, this is kind of a cool way. I think I'll do a little experiment and put it on as a podcast. And I did that, and then it got featured on iTunes 3 or 4 times. And then we got a front page feature, and our audience rose up, you know, pretty immensely after that. And then after that, I just branched out and I interviewed more guests and
kind of took off from there. What was really cool was I remember when your website was kind of in its infancy and it was called Bressler Works.
Very modest website.
And I remember coming into work one day and I saw you kind of sitting at the computer, just kind of staring at your website, just the front page. And I was like, what are you doing? And you were like, I'm trying to figure out how to make money with my website. Mm-hmm. and then like 4 months later, you had increased the subscriber base of Nick and Hyg, those cartoons, to like, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was around 700,000. Worldwide.
No, it wasn't that high.
No?
But it was like 5, I think.
I mean, that's still pretty solid. I mean, what you did is you had these kind of full-length cartoon episodes that you chopped up into 1.5, 2-minute segments and then just put those out there as individual mm-hmm. podcast episodes.
Yeah, I mean...
And they were a huge hit.
It was the podcasting craze and when it all kind of took off. And it was before people jumped on the bandwagon and then you got podcasts from like huge studios.
Yeah.
Trying to promote everything, their movies and stuff like that. This is when everything was indie. Mm-hmm. And there were just a few big names on the just like one or two. But, you know, I saw after I got featured and after my downloads increased, I had to take the stuff off of my server and put it on this. It's called Libsyn, Liberated Syndication. There's a hosting service. So I put it on their site because they had unlimited bandwidth. And I got a bunch of downloads, and I was pretty excited. So it kind of, you know, changed my whole perspective on the whole thing. I was like, maybe I'm onto something here. Maybe I should keep doing this.
And what I thought was brilliant was that there are a lot of other podcasts out there that were very popular. Ask a Ninja was one of them. Mm-hmm. And instead of kind of competing against those guys, you called them up.
I did. Yeah, I was on the podcast directory, and I just kind of watched a whole bunch of shows, and I was trying to think of anything that, you know, any type of future guest for my show, because I had this format, the Nick and Hyg format. I was like, well, Nick and Hyg are my buddies, I'm friends with them, but they're not, the only way that they're involved in this project is just kind of talking, telling their stories, and they're not really involved in production or anything like that. So I was doing the grunt of the work, and I was like, well, if I'm doing the grunt of the work, I might as well make it my show. This will be my show. It's not going to be the Nick and Hyg show. It'll be the Duke Tunes show.
Right.
And so I made it into the Duke Tunes show, and I said, well, first thing to do is to get a guest or a new guest or a new series of guests. So I looked around the podcast store and the directory, and I saw anybody that had, you know, that was doing something that people liked and was popular. But not just popular, lame popular, but popular, funny, quirky, something that I liked as well. And I came across Ask a Ninja, and they had been featured a couple of times as well and had a front page feature as well. And they were in like the top 100 podcasts. So I said, well, they're onto something too. So I figured he would be a great first guest other than Nick and Hyg. And he was. He was fantastic.
And what was so cool about that was
Ninja.
The Ninja. You got all those people who listened or watched that show to come over and see your stuff
right.
just by doing that, which was a brilliant move.
Right. It was like, it was funny because we merged the two shows for those, I think we did 7 episodes. And initially people were like, what's this Ask a Ninja show? And then people on their side were like, what's this Duke Tunes show? And so the first one that we did got received, I mean, it was received pretty well, but I had a strategy, and the strategy was I wasn't going to put all my eggs in one basket. I wanted to kind of give them a little taste of what was to come and then make every episode progressively funnier and funnier and funnier, as opposed to making something that putting all the jokes into one and then just dwindling off. I hate that. I hate it when that happens.
You see a lot of startup podcasts do that too.
Yeah, they put all their energy
into 3 or 4 episodes
into the first stuff, and then they like burnt out. Yeah. And so I wanted to kind of just build it. So, I mean, there's still, can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
In that case, I'm going to stress every swear word. There's still shit that I have from the Weird Al interview that is golden. And the stuff that's out right now, I only released two clips, animated clips with him, is moderately funny. But the stuff that's to come is absolutely hilarious.
Awesome.
And I've purposely done it that way to try to space it out so each episode gets funnier and funnier and better. Well, at least in my opinion, it gets better. I don't know. Some people might feel differently, but
you know. You've got some stuff you did with Tommy Chong as well.
There's a whole like 2 or 3 hour interview that I did with him that I've not gotten to touch because I've been doing other projects.
Yeah.
So I have him. I have Liam Sullivan, who's the shoes guy.
Let's get some shoes.
Yeah. So I have shoes. James Rolfe, who's the angry Nintendo nerd.
I love that dude.
He's hilarious.
Anybody listening to this, go to YouTube. Just do a search for angry Nintendo nerd.
Cinemassacre.com. Not all of his stuff is on YouTube, but
Cinemassacre?
Cinemassacre.com. He's a really, really smart editor, and he's really funny guy. He's probably one of the best. He does what he does the best. More than anybody I've seen on the net.
Is he local to LA as well?
I think he moved here, yeah.
That's
when
great.
When I interviewed him, it was over the phone, and we both recorded separately, and he sent me his tracks.
Cool.
But that's coming up. And then, let's see, who else? I, Justine, who's an internet
celebrity. You're going to do it with her?
I'm
going to do it with her.
Yeah.
Well, let me clarify real quick.
Oh, and the biggest, other than Al and Tommy Chong, is Harlan Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Who's coming up as well. And he recorded the funniest interview I think I've... It was just unbelievable.
I remember you telling me about that. That's really awesome.
It's super funny.
I want to clarify just before we go any further, because I don't think I mentioned this, that maybe I did, but Doug interviews people and then animates cartoon characters around the audio that he's recorded. And he also has a really great cartoon that shows up on Cinemax every once in a while called Eli's Dirty Jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find those on YouTube. It's really, really great. Well, this is fantastic because this is something that we really kind of push on this show is actors creating their own work. Mm-hmm. And leveraging the power of the internet and all these different social media networks to kind of really kind of sell themselves and their abilities and their talents.
Sure.
So once you had this podcast up and running of this show that you had been creating, what did you learn from that?
I learned that the internet is still the Wild West and it will be for a long time unless there are some kind of crazy regulations they put on it. In the near future, which I don't think is going to happen just yet. So I think there's a good, I don't know. I am not a fortune teller. I think maybe another 5 years of the way it is right now, and then things might start changing.
Net neutrality.
Yeah, net neutrality, exactly. Or anti-net neutrality.
Right.
But, you know, I'd say take advantage of it as much as possible right now. I mean, it is so experimental. There's no right way to do it, honestly. The key is to... Try everything. Try posting on every social media site. Try posting on forums. Honestly, if you get press on the net, it depends on what magazine, because I don't really think a lot of people are going and reading fashion magazines on the internet, if you know what I mean. Like, for instance, if you are there's certain types of people that still read magazines, and there are certain types of people that read all their news on the net. Say you're trying to pitch your show, right? And you get press on some random blog that posts, and it has a big audience, but your show has nothing to do with most of the stuff that's posted, like it's a tech site or something like that. People aren't going to watch your show because it's posted on that blog. They're not going to be interested. So the key is to find blogs that people that would watch your show read.
Right.
A lot of people think that just because they get their show posted on a blog that, oh my God, now I'm going to have a million viewers now. It doesn't work like that. People skip over that shit because they aren't interested in it. And that's the thing about the web. It's like such a low attention medium. There's so much there that you it's not like reading a magazine where there's like, read this article, then read this article, and you're sitting where you have no other choices. The web is like, oh, that reminds me of this. Let me click this link. I'll click this link. I'll go to this other website. Oh, what's this website? Oh, well, click this link. I'll go to this other website. Blah, 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 blah. And so I'd say don't concentrate on getting your thing on every single press website. But as of right now, the best form of promotion is word of mouth. And so if you get friends sending to friends, that's the number one thing.
And that's pretty much how DuoTunes kind of got off the ground. I mean, Nick and Hyde was just really good stuff that just kind of got passed from friend to friend.
It tapped into the stoner crowd. Yeah. And luckily there are a lot of stoners that go on the net
So that's huge. I mean, because you've only really got, 3 seconds of attention from the people that are browsing these web pages to kind of hook them in. So just find the right market.
Right.
You know,
find the right market.
Doing some sci-fi stuff, make sure you're posting on sci-fi blogs.
Totally. And there's a reason that comedy is the number one thing on the net. As of right now, I think a lot of people shop, or they don't shop, they send links to their videos across, and you know, the idea of sending a link to somebody is like, here, this is going to make you laugh. This is so intense, it'll blow your mind and make you cry and, you know, sit on the edge of your seat. That's for like a movie theater or a TV show or something like that. But for the web, you got to imagine most people don't come home after work because it's still the 9-to-5 in this day and age that people are working. So they don't come home after work and go on to the net and watch their shows on the net. They go home and they turn on the TV and watch all their dramas and stuff like that. Most people are watching comedy videos on the net at work because they get an email or they see a Twitter update or they have their phone with their, you know, thing. And I mean, can you imagine somebody sitting there with an iPhone on a bus? They get an email and it says, hey, you got to check out this video. It's the most depressing thing you've ever seen in your life. Do you think they're going to watch it right there on the bus?
Right. Yeah, no, people don't go on the web to be...
You got to see this. This is the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. Oh, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So that's why comedy's number one on the net.
Yeah.
Not depressing drama or anything like that. That's for TV. That's for personal space when you want your alone time watching your shows or going to the movie and having a group experience type of thing in the dark.
Yeah. And that's huge too, because so many actors out there have different characters that they've been doing their whole lives. Making some sort of little short web show to showcase this stuff and get it around is like, why wouldn't you be doing that?
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about leveraging things like Twitter and newsletters and things like that, because that's also something that you've done very successfully.
Twitter right now, I don't think it's the norm. I think a lot of people are on Twitter, but I don't think you still say it to somebody and they say, what's that? They don't know what it is. So it has an audience. But also keep in mind that people that are subscribed to you are also subscribed to 500 other people.
Yeah.
So the chance that they're going to see what you're posting is 1 in 500 over a time span. So it'll pass them by unless they're only subscribed to 4 people or 5 people or something.
And
you have to
be posting at certain times of day when people are actually active.
Exactly.
You can't post something at midnight and then hope the next day to get a bunch of responses.
Right. Everybody will tell you, Twitter's the future. Twitter's the future. Oh, that's how I'm getting my news. This and that, this and that, and this and that. No, I still think email's number one right now because it sits in your inbox until you read it. Twitter just is too scrolly.
Yeah.
Scrolls by.
You know what I like about Twitter, though, is that it gives – like I follow a couple of celebrities on Twitter that I'm like Imogen Heap. But I follow her on Twitter because it's so fascinating to me to be able to get kind of a look into her life and her personality.
Yeah.
I think Twitter's fantastic for that kind of thing. But as far as promoting a product or a service,
or show announcements, in fact, you came with me
to a Lady Danville show a few months ago, and I overheard you telling one of the band members, you were just like, Twitter is not a newsletter. Twitter is not this. Twitter is not that. You have to have a newsletter. And I was kind of eavesdropping, but I thought that was such good advice because it's not, you know?
Yeah, it's
so
not.
So you have 1,000. I think this is what it was. They had just been mentioned on the actual official Twitter account. They had gone up to San Francisco, played a show at Twitter headquarters.
Right.
And then they were wondering why they hadn't gotten a lot of followers from that or a lot of hits on their MySpace. And you were saying it's because of what we just mentioned, you know? People aren't necessarily tuned in at that time of day when that post went out.
No, somebody's eating a sandwich or washing their dog. Now, there's a few people that you'll see walking down the street completely zoned out, staring at their phone, going, look what he wrote. I'm going to put this picture right here.
Twitter power users.
Yes, but that's few. And that's looked down upon in this society right now. So, because the other people are like, you know, at least in LA, I'm looked down. But, you know, I don't know. You'll go out and you'll see it at bars and stuff, people Twittering and like laughing and stuff. I don't think that's going to last very long. I honestly think that there's going to be a huge privacy uprising.
Really?
Where everybody's going to freak out and be like, it's not cool to be on a social networking site, but I could be completely wrong because there's always revolutions in life. There's always revolutions. There's always something is so overpowering that you got the rebels who come in and then say, I'm too good for Facebook. I'm not going to put my stuff on the line. I'm going to be online. I'm going to be very, very private, but I could be completely way off because, I mean, the kids these days are very open to sharing all their personal information.
Kids these days?
Yeah, I mean, hey.
My stepmom.
You see their pictures. I mean, see everything.
When MySpace was in its heyday, I had a couple things up there, and the girl I was dating at the time also had where she worked, where she went to school, where she was from, and my stepmom emailed us one day and was like, why are you kids doing this? You know, people could find out. And I kind of stopped to think about it because it didn't really cross my mind. But then I was like, oh, yeah, like, she's a cute girl. Like, somebody could totally show up at her work, go on her profile, see what she looks like, find out where she works, and go there.
Sure, man. Do you remember when MySpace first came out and Friendster?
Yeah.
And you're like, do I really want my personal information online?
Yeah.
I mean, we actually thought about it at that time. I don't know if you did, but I did. I was like, you know, I'm used to having my life pretty much private. And here's this social networking thing that, you know, that's taking me out of the element. Anyway.
What I think it is, I'm sorry to cut you off real fast. Mm-hmm. I think it's Twitter and Facebook and all this stuff is so, they're so popular because they cater to the ego.
Yeah.
I know that sounds kind of psychological, overly psychological, but that's exactly what it is. It says, look at me, look how important I am, look how interesting I am.
Just the name
YouTube
alone.
YouTube as well, yeah.
YouTube. It's all about you, you know?
So sorry,
I'm not going to go on a huge rant about kids and how they're so egotistical and narcissist these days. But they are. No, but I won't go into a huge rant about that. But I will say that who knows how long that's going to last for.
Yeah.
You know, there could be some kind of revolution where everybody takes all their information offline, you know, because they're afraid or, you know, like the rebellion, like, you know, everybody is gonna Big Brother is watching you type of thing. So
you know what I think it is too. I mean, like I said, to go back to the Imogen Heap example, I follow her because I'm interested in her personal life. Mm-hmm. But there's a honeymoon period, and then it kind of drops off.
Everything gets old. Yeah. Everything gets old. This is why Facebook updates their website every 2 or 3 months with like a new format, and everybody is like, "Well, I like the old format." But the truth of the matter is, if they didn't do that, they would be the next MySpace.
Right. That's why Apple's coming out with a new product every 2 weeks.
Right. You got to keep, you know, and the same thing, you know, I don't know, to get back to acting, it's the same thing. Like, it's a strange divide between, you know, people love their tradition and their familiarity, and then also they like new and never seen before. And like, for instance, Christopher Walken, has he ever, since 1980 something, has he done a different type of role?
I see more of Christopher Walken doing musical kind of parody type things.
Right, of himself. But since I think there was a certain time, maybe in the 90s, when, you know, he did like The Deer Hunter, which he was completely different. Like, he was pretty awesome in that. I think he won an Academy Award for that. And then somehow he changed into this parody of himself, and now that's all he ever does. Christopher Walken. You know, that's, I can't do it. You'd probably do better.
If you could have wings or a tail,
yeah,
which would you have?
Exactly. Have. Yeah, and so people love their Christopher Walken. They don't want him to change. They want to see that. But at the same time, you know, there's other people that are like, oh, I'm bored of Christopher Walken. Why doesn't he do anything else? Why doesn't he do anything different? So there's really no way to win. I guess, you know, look at Will Ferrell. People don't like him that much anymore. Look at Land of the Lost. That was a total bomb, you know. The key is, I don't know. I mean, when you're thinking about promoting yourself and presenting yourself in a certain way, just to do it the way that you want to do it. And, you know, it's important to look at other people and see what they've done, but you build off of that. You
right.
know, you don't copy or emulate that. You build off of it. You take a little bit from everywhere. Mm-hmm. Take a little taste from Christopher Walken. Take a little taste from Gary Oldman. You take a little taste from this guy, and then you figure out what works and what works for you and what feels satisfying for you. If you're doing something that everybody loves but you fucking hate it, then you'll go insane. Like, what's that guy?
Oh, not Peter Sellers.
Yeah, that guy Peter Sellers. Yeah, they did a HBO movie on his life a few years ago. And it was about how he didn't know who he was because he was just playing a character his entire life. He was trying to please everybody. And so right. he ended up going crazy and living like a life of just agony.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a prime example of somebody who isn't doing what they feel like they satisfies them, but they're trying to please everybody and stuff. So
you really got to find the balance there between reinventing yourself, but not making it too personal.
Right.
You're constantly building your brand. Like, I feel like I know when I watch anything by Duketunes that it's going to be top quality.
Well,
you know,
you
don't attach your name to anything unless it's like been done right. And I think that is a huge lesson, especially when you've got something like YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff where you can put stuff out there, but there's no guarantee of it being seen by anybody. There's no guarantee of it being successful.
No.
But you've made your living that way.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, I mean, I've tried to, you know, practice what I preach when it comes to just trying a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. you know, and not, I mean, it's a little sad because a lot of people, they put a lot of energy into something and then they assume that it's, since they've put so much energy into it, that everybody's going to feel that and it's going to be a huge hit. And so when it doesn't turn out to be a huge hit, they go and they like jump off a cliff. You can't do that. Can't do that. You got to put all your energy into it, but not take anything for granted and just be like, look, this could be a total flop, but I'm having fun making this.
Right.
I'm loving it, you know? And so that's what living is. It's not making it for an audience and then just praying that it's going to be successful. Cause if it's not, you'll tear off your own face. If you really enjoy acting and that's what you want to do with your life, you better make sure that if something is a complete failure, you still had fun doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not, that's not a happy life there. There's a lot of stuff that I wish had a bigger, a broader audience, but I've still had fun making pretty much everything. Somebody asked me why I haven't tried to pitch for shows or a movie or anything like that. And I think the main reason is because I like building. I don't want to just jump into anything I'm not prepared for. And so I did a show, Fangirls Guide, which was a talk radio show I did a few months ago. And they were asking why I hadn't been more active in pitching a TV show or a movie or something like that. And I think my answer was because I don't feel I'm ready yet for like a TV show. I want to have fun a little bit more. If I had made a movie 2 years, 3 years ago, it probably would have sucked ass. Probably would have been the worst thing ever because I was definitely not ready. And so I want to make sure that I'm prepared. And when I do make my first feature or have my first full-length TV show, I've already kind of had a miniature TV show with, you know,
Eli's.
Eli's. But when I have my first full-length half-hour show or hour show, I want it to be, you know, the best that you know, I want it to be a certain level of quality.
Yeah.
And I'm working on it.
And that's
I think I'm almost ready for it, but I'm not I kind of want to fart around a little bit first, do a little bit more stuff.
That's a huge lesson for actors too. Actors, don't give away your power. You know, if you're handed something that's going to pay you and you're thinking, "Oh my gosh, this is my chance. Here we go." But you're not 100% comfortable with it, you know? Don't take it. Let yourself kind of develop and evolve. If you're in this for life, hopefully. If you're not in this for life, you're probably not in this very much longer
at
all.
That's my attitude. And it might not be the right attitude, but it's worked for me so far. I mean, I've been just building and having a good time doing it. The last thing I'd ever want to do is do a big project and just have it completely fall on its face.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, not only will I feel like shit, but everybody that was involved with the project will feel like shit. And then, you know, everybody that sees that and says, "Oh, that was a huge flop. It was terrible, blah, 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 blah," and so many other connotations come to that. So, you know, you want to be prepared. You want to be prepared for that.
For sure.
And, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world if that happens, but I'd rather avoid it.
Sure.
I'd rather avoid that and make something that's great that hopefully people like and that when I feel prepared enough to make it, and that way, you know, things will turn out better.
And then keep building from there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we've got to wrap it up, but based on everything you've been doing with DoTunes and all these different kind of social media sites and all the networking you've done, if you could come up with just one piece of advice for actors to kind of take their career and take a step forward today or next week or next month with some of their own work, what would you say?
Don't plan your life out too much. Let circumstance take its course, and if you're an actor, you have to work your ass off. It's not easy. You're going to have to, I mean, honestly, it's all about timing. It is all about timing. It is all about, you know, there's a number of different things: talent, timing, circumstance, luck, hard work, a whole bunch of things that go into it, but timing is number one. So, you know, I'm not saying, when I say timing, I'm saying, like, you'll get opportunities, windows that open up, and the key is to jump into that. But, you know, not to totally negate what I just said about not jumping in too fast.
Right.
You want to allow yourself to have opportunities that are feasible. So, for instance, if you know you're ready for a TV show and you get that little window, jump on it, you know. But if they're like, "Oh, we got this part where it's Shakespeare," and you're like, I've never studied Shakespeare," and they're like, "Oh, well, you got 3 months to do it," and you don't feel like you're ready for that. I mean, you could,
don't kill your brand.
Yeah, you could totally take your, you know, when those windows open up, jump in. Just make sure you're prepared.
Yeah,
and don't wait too long.
And make sure that you're constantly out there creating your own work and being in front of people.
Yeah, I mean,
as
honestly,
much as possible.
The internet is so limitless. There's no reason for you not to be doing that. And everything that I said today could be absolutely false, but I don't know. It's worked for me pretty well so far. All I would say is it might be the same for somebody else. You know, that's what's so wonderful about the net and new media is that everything's, you know, like there's this guy, Buck. What the Buck? Have you heard of his show?
No.
Exactly. He's got a huge audience, but you've never heard of him. And that's what the internet is. Somebody could have an immense audience. And then you talk to somebody sitting next to you and they're like, "No. But have you heard of this guy?" And you're like, "No." It's like, but they're huge.
Yeah.
It's like a whole different other thing. It's not like movies or TV where, Everybody's heard of Will Ferrell. Everybody's heard of Michael Jackson. Everybody's heard of Dana Carvey. Well, not so much now, but Tom Cruise.
David Spade.
Right. Somebody, you know, people know who these people are. But on the net, even though somebody could have a million subscribers, like, do you know who Smosh is?
Nope.
They were the number one subscribed channel on all of YouTube.
Really?
Yes. And so, you know.
And that's funny. I have no idea who
exactly.
that is.
Exactly.
And yet I consider myself in the entertainment industry.
Well, exactly. And you have a pretty good knowledge of the internet and you know what's, you know.
I like to think so.
Yeah. So yeah. Even if somebody, there's too much out there for yeah. you to know everything.
But if you're doing that kind of thing and then you do come across the casting director or the filmmaker or the producer in training, you know, whoever it is that does know about you. How many doors will that open up for you? Because
sure.
it shows that you're legitimate. You're somebody who is worthy of being followed.
Right. Yeah,
and
exactly.
worked with.
Yeah. Yeah, we could go into a whole another half hour about that. But you're very – that's very true. To, you know, when people hear your name and recognize it. So as you were saying, it's very important to take advantage of the medium and – just put all your stuff out there, you know, as much as you can in a very strategic way.
Yeah.
But, you know, get a lot of exposure. You know, don't worry about hammering it down people's throats. If it's good, then I don't think people will mind. Just get the word out. Get the word out and take advantage of the fact that the internet's the Wild West and there's not a lot of regulation on there right now.
Cool.
I mean, anybody can have a website. You got to have a website. And you got to have a YouTube channel. And you got to have all these other things that go along with that, Twitter and yeah. all that stuff. And just make sure, you know, don't fret if you only have two Twitter followers.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, these are tools. These are not the be-all, end-all. It's not
exactly.
a popularity contest.
Right.
You know, these are tools to help you kind of push your talents and your goals.
It just gives it, – it's you want to have as many options as there are in the net. You got to make sure to have all of those options open for people.
Right.
But that's the state of things right now, as I was saying before. Who knows what's going to happen in 5 years? But if
or
you,
2 years for that matter.
If you, you know, I mean, we're not talking about getting a movie role in 5 years. We're talking about – working right now. So
yeah.
As long as you're getting the word out and sending out those emails, those newsletters, you know, not annoying the shit out of people, but just notifying people of everything that you're doing and building a fan base and building, you know, an audience, then you're going in the right direction.
If people want to find out more about you, see some of your work, where can they go?
www.duketunes.com.
Duketunes.com. Yeah, check it out, everybody. And if they want to get in touch with you, can I email you? Can they follow you on Twitter? Can they get on your newsletter?
There's a bunch of contact info on my site. There's also, if you go to DougBressler.com, DougBressler.com, there's contact info on there.
Awesome.
DougBressler@gmail.com. And
cool. Well, thanks, Doug, for doing this.
No problem. My pleasure.
Looking forward to seeing what's coming next from Duketunes. And guys, sit tight. We'll be back in just a sec. Okay, guys, welcome back. We hope you dug that interview with Doug.
That was terrible.
That
man.
Was terrible.
That
was terrible.
Again?
No, we'll just leave it.
I like it. Hope
yeah.
you dug the interview with Doug.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up, guys. If
that's
you have
episode
any questions,
four.
That's
Woo!
Episode four. If you have any questions, you can always shoot us an email, insideactingpodcast@gmail.com, or leave us a comment on insideactingpodcast.com.
And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at twitter.com/digitalactor.
I'm twitter.com/TrevorAlgott. Just hit up the website for that spelling.
But also you can click on the donate button. We would love it if you could just kick a dollar or two our way. This helps us cover production expenses and keep going. And lastly, if you feel so inclined, hop on iTunes, write us an interview.
You mean a review.
Or an interview, did I say?
You said interview, yeah. Write us an interview.
Write us an interview so we can read it on the air. Write us a review.
Write us a review.
We would love it.
We have three on there, and they're all 5 stars.
We have 4 now.
Oh, we have 4?
Yeah.
I missed one. They're all 5-star reviews, so thank you very much for those of you out there listening to this. Please tell your friends about it. Retweet us. Repost our link. Send people to the website. Send people to the podcast and iTunes. Yeah. And don't forget to subscribe.
Yeah, subscribe and you'll get them automatically downloaded to you. All right, guys, until episode 5 next week, thanks so much for listening. I'm Trevor Elgott.
I'm Albert Meyer.
Take it easy.